Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 We from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4. Number 5. Rajya Gacha Samichanam Bacho Brahman Sarvagyasya Tavanaga Tamovisiri Temayam. Rajyavacha,
the king said,
Samichinam,
perfectly right.
Arvacha,
speeches.
Brahman, a learned Brahmana. Sarvagyasya,
one who knows all.
Tava,
your.
Anaga,
without any contamination.
Tamaha,
the darkness of ignorance.
Vishiryate,
gradually disappearing.
Mayam,
unto me.
Hare,
of the Lord.
Katayita,
as you are speaking.
Katam,
topics.
Translation. Maharaj Parikit said, O learned Brahmana, you know everything because you are without material contamination. Therefore, whatever you have spoken to me appears perfectly right. Your speeches are gradually destroying the darkness of my ignorance, for you are narrating the topics of the Lord. Report by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The practical experience of Maharaj Parikit is disclosed herein, revealing that transcendental topics of the Lord act like injections when received by the sincere devotee from a person who is perfectly uncontaminated by material teachings. In other words, reception of the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam from professional men heard by that Kamakandiya audience never acts miraculously as stated here. Devotional hearing of the messages of the Lord is not like hearing ordinary topics. Therefore, the action will be felt by the sincere hearer by experience of the gradual disappearance of ignorance. Yasya deve para bhakti yata deve tata gulo tasya te kvita yata prakashante mahatmanaha. From the Shweta Svetara Upanishad 6.23. So Srila Prabhupada doesn't give a translation for that verse, so he's assuming that we all know. He wants to say the Itadeve Parabhakti, Itadeve Titaguru, Tashaite Kita Hita Pakashante Mahatana. That's right, yes. To one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the purports, the full understanding of the Vedic knowledge is automatically revealed. When a hungry man is given food to eat, he feels satiation of hunger and the pleasure of dining simultaneously. Thus, he does not have to ask whether he has actually been fed or not. The crucial test of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is that one should get positive enlightenment by such an act. So just read the verse again. Rajyavacca samichinam vachopanaman saravagyasya tvamagam tamo jivite nayam harekatayitam harekatayitakitam. Maharaj Pariksit said, "O learned Brahmana, you know everything because you are without material contamination. Therefore, whatever you have spoken to me appears perfectly right. Your speeches are gradually destroying the darkness of my ignorance, for you are narrating the topics of the Lord." Here, Srila Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, of course, that here is a practical example by Pariksit Maharaj of the how hearing transcendental topics act like injections, or, you know, to purify. You'll get a definite effect, purifying effect, if the messages are heard from one who is without material contamination, and the person who is hearing is sincere. He describes here that reception of the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam from professional men heard by a Karmakandi audience never acts miraculously, as stated here. So, now Srila Prabhupada explains that before he came to the West, over the course of maybe 100 years or so, various yogis and swamis had come to the West and had preached from the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And he says that in that time they did not make one single devotee. You know, if you go through the history of all the different swamis and yogis and so-called devotees, they preached from the Bhagavad Gita, they preached from Srimad Bhagavatam, and they did not make one single devotee. And of course, when Srila Prabhupada spoke the Bhagavad Gita as it is, not to earn his profession, but simply to help people become Krishna conscious, you know, to in the service of his spiritual master, and the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And because he was uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, that means he was not covered by ignorance or material motive. Therefore, when he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, even in the most simplest way, he created thousands of devotees. In India, and of course now, sometimes these things are spreading throughout the West a little bit. But people who have hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they may have kirtan, different things. And those persons who are doing that they are professional people. It is their business. The audience, they're also not sincere. You know, the audience, their intention is that they will, you know, hear some transcendental topics, and they have full intention that when it is all finished, they are going back to exactly where they left off. Srila Gaura Kishora Das Babaji, sometimes people would come to see Srila Gaura Kishora Das Babaji and they would say, "Yes, I am completely surrendered to you. I just want to serve your lotus feet. And I have full faith in your lotus feet. You are great Vaishnava." He would say, "So you have full faith? Yes. You're here to serve? Yes. Okay, I will give you instruction. Do not go back home. You stay here. You chant Hare Krishna with me forever." So Prabhupada says that Gaura Kishora Das Babaji was very humorous. We know that he is extremely strict, but he had this humorous side. And of course, there was no way they were going to do that. But, you know, people who are insincere, you know, it means that they want to make a show of some spiritual activity, but their determination is that they're going to, you know, continue pretty much exactly the same, you know, material situation, and that little show is over like that. And the people who speak to them, the professional men, they don't really care what happens after their, you know, little 7-day or 3-day retreat. Yes, let them go back, you know, to their homes and do whatever they're going to do. Let them go to hell as long as I get my, you know, rewards from speaking, then who cares? So they call this the Bhagavad Sataha. So these things here, you know, there's some tiny little benefit there. You know, it is the Srimad Bhagavatam after all. There's also a lot of harm done. You know, people can be very misguided and you know, get a wrong impression of Krishna, which can make their literally ensure that they may never really come to devotional service. You know, and as long as they maintain that sort of strong misconception, that, you know, then has to be overcome by a proper guru. You know, it's like the guru, the musical teacher. Two disciples came and said, "Yes, we want to learn to play music." And he said to one disciple, "How much do you know?" "I know nothing." "Well, I will charge you, you know, 5 rupees. And he said to the other one, "How much do you know?" "Oh, I've been playing for so many years. For you, I will charge 10 rupees. He says, "Why is that?" "He knows nothing. I know, you know, I've already been practicing." He said, "Because for you, I have to undo everything you think you know before I can even teach you, you know, the first. So there's twice as much work. So for you, I charge double." So, you know, there's some benefit there, but, you know, a lot of harm. It's very hard to undo these you know, misconceptions that people get. But if the person speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the holy names, if they are sincere, you know, they're doing that because they have an interest to serve the Lord by helping people become Krishna conscious. And the people who are hearing, you know, they're sincere. You know, they want to somehow or another you know, advance in spiritual understanding and spiritual realization, God consciousness, become purified, solve the problems of material existence, then that message becomes potent, and then you know, it will act. Prabhupada says here, so he says, when a hungry man is given food to eat, he feels satiation of hunger and the pleasure of dining simultaneously. Thus he does not have to ask whether he is actually being fed or not. You know, if something is working, if something is potent, you don't have to, you know, get the certificate, you know, well, where's my certificate that I'm, you know, I'm now Krishna conscious, or, you know, I'm now, you know, making some progress. You know, you give me a certificate, it has, you know, we're finished, it's done. It's, there, the person knows. Now, therefore, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that here, Prith Maharaj is a practical example. Now, in this verse, Maharaj is addressed, we start this cycle, Rajavancha. Rajavancha. That he is the king. Prith Maharaj is the. The narrator of the Srimad Bhagavatam is reminding us that Prithvi Maharaj is actually the emperor of the entire world. But what is Prithvi Maharaj's situation here is that he is sitting on the bank of the Ganga with Sukadeva Goswami, and although he is the king, he actually he's lost his kingdom. That's all being taken away by the curse of the Brahmin boy, that you know, within 7 days he will die, and therefore he has given up his kingdom. Although Srila Prabhupada mentions that actually, because he was a great Vaishnava, and from the very beginning of his life he was always protected by Krishna. Krishna protected him from the Brahmastra, which tried to kill him, is like the potency of an atomic bomb, and tried to kill him even within the womb. So there's no question that he could not counteract this curse. But he voluntarily gave up his kingdom and left everything. And he is saying that he is your speeches are gradually destroying the darkness of my ignorance, for you are narrating the topics of the Lord. And he is feeling very, very satisfied sitting here with Sukadeva Goswami. He is not, you know, lamenting. Just recently we've had the, probably still going on, the bushfires in New South Wales. And, you know, you see that people, you know, the fires come through and just burn down people's houses and everything that they own, you know, their cows, their animals, you know, everything is just gone within a second. And you can see, you know, if you watch the news, that, you know, they are absolutely devastated. They're in shock. And, you know, I've met different people from bushfires and you know, when I was in Adelaide, they had bushfires that come through there as well. They used to come to the temple. And even when you see them years later, many of them never recover. You know, just that, how devastating it is for them, you know, to lose everything. And I remember one time I was sitting on the bench outside here, and I saw this man that was sitting there, and he looked like dog's breakfast, as I say. He looked terrible, you know. And I said to him, what is wrong with you? You know, what is wrong with you? he said, I've just lost everything. He said, I had a boat. He'd sailed from Sydney to Melbourne or something on a boat, all his possessions on the boat. And there was a storm, and that storm smashed his boat to pieces, and everything he owned was there. And he was just absolutely devastated. He was just beside himself, just extremely distressed at that. But of course, now if you compare that to Maharaj Parikit, what has he actually lost? Parikit Maharaj, the emperor of the entire world, and we know that the opulence, when they went to the battle of Kurukshetra, just to describe some of the opulence, there were so many phalanxes of people on horses, people on elephants, chariots. All of those chariots, the elephants, the horses, they were all decorated with gold and jewelry. Imagine how much gold it takes to decorate an elephant. And in the phalanx there's so many thousands of elephants, and then there's so many, 18 Aksha, how many, that's just going to war. And there's the story of before the battle, I think it was, that Maharaj Yudhisthira needed to get some extra finances for the war, and he didn't know what to do. And Krishna said to Arjuna that if you go to a certain place in the mountains, there was a very wealthy king who used to do big yajnas, and there you'll find so much jewels and gold that's just been discarded, that when they used to perform the yajnas, massive big yajna kund, because there were just tons of ghee, imagine it, and they just bring them up in the truck load, because there were no trucks in those days, an elephant load, bring ghee, grains and things like that. And everything was made of gold, everything. And after the yajna, they would just discard everything. And they just, they would, whatever was there, they would give to the brahmanas. And the brahmanas, they were given, just take as much gold as you want, they had, because they used to eat off gold plates as well. And China, even today, respectable families in India, they won't eat off China, because it's, they'll have silver plates, silver cups, even for eating. And even the gold plates, they would eat off them once and throw them. So, and the brahmanas were like, they'd pick up, a few, and then the rest they just left it there. And the brahmanas are thinking, who wants to carry all this gold? We'll take one or two. So there was massive amounts of there. So Arjuna, they went there and they collected up all this gold and jewelry. And of course, they were able to finance the war. And of course, they won that war. When you win the war, then all the booty, that means, all the wealth which is there, even in the battlefield, the crowns and the jewelry, that is also distributed into the kingdom. So, it's a huge wealth, wealth that we cannot even conceive of. So he hasn't lost a little, wooden hut somewhere with a few photographs, and the massive wealth he has just given up like that. And his status, he's the king, he's the emperor, so now he's just, he's that position is gone, like this. So, but he is feeling that he is hearing these topics about Krishna, and he has firm faith in Krishna, the personality of Godhead, and he has firm faith that a personality like Sukadeva Goswami can properly describe, you know, Krishna, and how to, you know, serve Krishna, and how to go back to Godhead, how to develop one's love, and therefore he is feeling very, very satisfied, because he understands, if one understands Krishna, that Krishna, he is Bhagavan, and he is complete. Therefore, one who is situated in the relationship with the perfect and complete, that person becomes perfect and complete. There's no question of deficiency. Connect with Krishna, who is everything, the complete whole, how can there be deficiency? How can there be some, you know, question of loss, or, you know, something is not quite there, something is not quite correct? So he is hearing the book, and then, you know, one may question then, yes, but how is that manifest? So we hear the stories of, you know, Krishna, that, you know, he married 16,108 wives. Because he was demonstrating, you know, that as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is perfect and complete. Krishna came to show us, yes. And those, each of those 16,108 wives, they all lived in different palaces. And again, we cannot even begin to, you know, estimate the, you know, the opulence of those palaces made out of, you know, ivory and coral and, you know, crystals and jewelry. Even then, you know, one time Satyabhama, one of Krishna's wives, she said that, you know, they have this beautiful Parijata tree flower in the heavenly planets. I would like one here in our palace. So Krishna said, yes, I can. So he went to the heavenly planets, and they were going to take one Parijata tree. And Indra objected, you cannot, you know, take this. They do not you know, grow in the lower planetary system down here. Anyway, there was some big, you know, kerfuffle, and Krishna, you know, managed to defeat Indra, and Krishna took that Parijata tree. Therefore, even when Krishna, anyone who has a relationship with Krishna, that relationship is perfect and complete. So here Krishna is the henpecked husband. Even as the henpecked husband, he is still perfect and complete. With the Krishna, and, you know, and of course this is one of the difficulties that, you know, this is the month of Damodar. Krishna is just a little baby. We sing this song every morning, that even Krishna is a little baby, still he is perfect and complete. Any whatever relationship one has, any devotee who is in a relationship with Krishna, then Krishna is the perfect person in that relationship for that devotee. So of course each of us has a relationship. Every devotee has a relationship. We have an eternal relationship which we're not aware of. But even in this point, even in our beginning stages, still Krishna is perfect and complete. we just don't quite realize it. But even we don't realize how Krishna is perfect and complete. If we're sincere, that relationship is perfect and complete. Even in our immaturity, there's Krishna's mercy. Therefore, Krishna appears Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that in order to, in Kali Yuga, for anyone who has some, you know, sincere desire to serve or develop their eternal relationship with Krishna, then Krishna appears as the most magnanimous incarnation to give that freely to even the most fallen sinful persons, you know, in this age of Kali. As long as if there's some sincerity to take that, then that is an only qualification. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, in our line, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, he appeared as a devotee to show us the path of Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the most beautiful personality. Of course, we know that because we see him every morning. But he's Guru Sundara, Guru Chandra. He's more beautiful than millions and millions of golden moons. And his wife was the goddess of fortune, most beautiful, most qualified woman within all of creation, spiritual creation. He was a young man, he was about 24, and he gave up everything and took sannyas. Very, very influential person. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so influential that, you know, when the Chankazi tried to stop the Sangitan movement, Prabhupada says, just with a wave of his hand, hundreds of thousands of people came. Imagine his influence. That means that they were prepared, they put their life on the line, you know, to go up against the Chankazi in those days means that, you know, you could lose everything, including your life. But no, so hundreds of thousands. Okay. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave up all of that within a second. His spiritual master said to him, Ishwar Puri, that you simply chant this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he put his faith in the instructions of the spiritual master, and that Krishna is not different from his holy name. And he gave up everything, and he was perfectly satisfied. He was perfectly satisfied. And his disciples, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they also were extremely wealthy. You know, Mandalapati, they were the leaders of many, many circles of influential persons, very, very powerful people, actually. Opulent, you know, Rupa Goswami, when he renounced, they had to take his wealth in a big boat, so much, distributed. And they lived in Vrindavan, and just under a different tree each night, just with the loincloths, and executing the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, executing the instruction of their spiritual master with full faith. And they were fully satisfied. And because they had full faith in the instruction of their spiritual master, who was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, they were feeling, like a person who is, their hunger has been satisfied. They're not desiring anything else, fully satisfied. Fully absorbed in Gopi Baba, the mood of Krishna and the gopis. And they executed the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to establish the lost places of pilgrimage in Vrindavan, to establish temples, to write books and to propagate the cult of bhakti, Krishna consciousness. And coming down, in our line, all the acharyas, we see that Guru Kishordas Babaji, he said to his disciple Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, you know, you leave everything aside and you just, you know, preach this Krishna consciousness, the people in general, this will do good to you, it will do good to everyone. And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, when he met Srila Prabhupada, you know, he gave the instruction, you're a young man, educated, you go and preach in the West. And in every case we see that, you know, the disciple who has put their full faith in that instruction, which is the same instruction, you know, we have, you know, we are trying to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's mission to, you know, help people become Krishna conscious. And if we have that faith in that instruction to serve Srila Prabhupada, his representatives, you know, the current gurus who are, you know, situated firmly fixed at Prabhupada's lotus feet, if we serve that order, that we also will feel like Vrilikit Maharaj, completely satisfied. And as described in the Bhagavad Gita, that, you know, that position, when one is fixed up in Krishna consciousness, then even in the greatest difficulties, the greatest dangers, you know, one cannot be shaken at that. So this is practical experience, you know. No one can question, you know, was Srila Prabhupada Krishna conscious? Was Bhakti Siddhanta Krishna conscious? You know, did Purikit Maharaj, you know, was he Krishna conscious? That was, you know, there was no doubt that they, because they're so fixed up, satisfied, completely satisfied, just to hear the topics of Krishna, and then to, you know, hear and chant and to give others that opportunity. And there is so much evidence of that. And what we hear, you know, here 5,000 years ago, they say, you know, that this is something that happened 5,000 years ago, but, you know, can we, but then we have Prabhupada's example, and the example of Prabhupada's disciples, and the example of Prabhupada's grand disciples, who are getting the same experience by following the same instruction as what Purikit Maharaj experienced. So one who, so there is so much evidence, and of course the real proof is in the pudding, as they say, that if one puts their faith in, you know, this instruction to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and to help other people become Krishna conscious, one will definitely feel so satisfied that everything, you know, in the entire universe appears no more significant than a speck of dust. You know, as described, I think, by Prabhupada Saraswati, you know, the position of a devotee, that, you know, all the demigods, all the great demigods, Durga, Indra, they're like insects. You know, we offer respect to every living entity, of course, but for a devotee, you know, and everything within the entire universe, like a speck of dust. You know, you're walking down the street, a little speck of dust, you know, hits your arm, and then it might fall off. You are neither elated because you've gained something, nor do you lament that you've lost something. And this is the position of the devotee. That, you know, the entire universe is like a speck of dust. It has no real significance. And they are completely satisfied just to hear and chant the holy names of the Lord. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. That's what makes it special. Otherwise, it's a void. That's right. Actually, we were talking before about the bushfires, how people lost everything in the bushfire, but I think you're in that situation as well. At one stage, you lost everything you owned in the bushfire, and now you're completely satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
How do you define Krishna consciousness?
Well, I read the Bhagavad Gita. I found the Bhagavad Gita when I was intoxicated at a party. And then I used to go into the bush up on Arthur's Seat, Arthur's Seat in Drummond, and I would camp there for a couple of weeks just by myself. So I just had a tent, I had a bag of muesli, I had some milk powder, I had some water. And I would stay there for maybe a couple of weeks, and I would just read the Gita. And then I was very fortunate that after doing that a few times, and I wanted to read something else, because I hadn't met a devotee at this stage, but I remember my brother had a pink book he'd showed me some years back, and I thought, I asked him, what is that book? And he said, you don't read that, you wouldn't be interested. And I don't know why, but I thought, I wonder if that book is a book on yoga, something to do with it. And I went to my brother's room, and I searched everywhere, which is my own room, we used to stay in the same room. Looked under the bed, under the bed in the box of all sorts of things that you never, used. There was this pink book, and I pulled it out, and I turned it over, and there's Prabhupada's picture, it's an act of devotion.
Yeah.
So I packed up my muesli, milk powder, off again I went. And I also used to, along the Mount Martha, I used to leave home at about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I would just walk along the beach, and you find these little caves, and I just have my sleeping bag and maybe a book, and I would just stay in a little cave for a couple of nights. It was sort of just above the water, so when you wake up, you just got the ocean open. And I felt completely satisfied. I was reading about these personalities, Brihad Maharaj and Arjuna, and I felt, yes, you can have nothing. Here I am with nothing, no amenities, no facilities, and I felt, this is very, very satisfying. I could do this forever. So, I understood that, this was something, this works. Thank you, Shannon.